Jenny and I, we just are so grateful and thankful that you guys allow us to come and just talk about what God's doing in Mexico and other areas that we are involved in. And we do look at this church as a vital part of who we are and what we do. And so everything that I talk about and say, that when I say the word we, I mean we. Because we would not be able to do what we do if it weren't for people like you that support us in prayer, most importantly, and in multiple other areas, being able to have a base to come back to be able to hang out and just talk about stuff. We just came up yesterday, and I was expecting it to be a much shorter trip across the border, and it wasn't. We had a young lady who was from New Zealand that was staying with us, and we were dropping her off at LAX on the way back, and so I thought, oh, the normal is about 2 hours to go through. Well, it ended up taking us 4, and then we got into LA and everything, so I was expecting to be here 5 o'clock. We finally rolled in about 8 last night, so I got up early this morning and put this PowerPoint together. So if there's little spots that are kind of off, that's why. So this year has been really interesting for us. We had anticipated it being in a different combination of stuff than it actually turned out to be, because we thought that churches would be fine with not having the COVID restrictions anymore, that they would want to come down, and that just didn't happen. But the thing was is that God was very, very faithful about filling in. There was a lot of other things that we had opportunity to. One of the things that I am most proud of is that last month we actually made it to our 6-year mark of being in the field. So we've made it to the second hand. So that's always important. You get it past the first one, get to the second one, then it's all, you know, then it's easy going down from there. I'm trying to remember how to do this. So one of the first things that we did right after we were here last was actually we went to the convention, U.S. convention in Orlando, Florida, which was the first time we've really been able to do that in quite a few years, and that was just, it was nice. I ended up working most of it, but still. We had quite a group of people, and then we were able, one of the things that I really enjoyed was that we have some friends of ours that are actually being deployed, I believe it's next week, to the Dominican Republic. They were based in Haiti, but because of the security issues, they were not able to stay there. So they came back to the United States, and now they're being redeployed into the Dominican Republic. And we were able to, Jenner and I were able to pray over them in the ordination that was there at the convention. Right before we were here, we were able to speak at a youth camp to talk about missions. And this was just outside of Phoenix. So that was actually, we didn't take any pictures because, you know, we were in the middle of being everything, but we did that. And then right after that, we had a new church come down. They came from New Hampshire, which was a long way away. And so they were there for a whole week. We were able to, this one here is actually doing some crafts at a day school. So one of the things about in Mexico is that if you do not have your birth certificate, you can't attend public school. And so there's a lot of people that just, they were either born outside of the city or they're in different areas and they don't have that. And so they don't have a lot of access. And so one of the ministries that we connect with down there is that they do this day school so that they're actually able to get some sort of education to be able to go into the workforce when they get to a certain age. But this is just another ministry that falls in. And so we were there just to go and bless them. Did some crafts, just kind of did some fun things with the kids, gave them a little break from all the schoolwork that they were doing. And then, it jumped. And then what we did, this is a typical church in Tijuana. And Foursquare, our denomination, they have roughly about between 80 and 90 churches in the Tijuana, Rosarito, Ensenada area. And so this size right here is your basic, your typical church. It's going to be about, roughly about this size here. So you don't see the big mega churches. You don't see the big, huge churches that you would hear in the U.S. this is the very typical, because transportation is tough, especially in Tijuana. If you've ever been there, they have hills that will compete against San Francisco. I mean, some of those roads are actually really kind of scary. You go over the hill and you can't see the dip going down. And the thing is that because of that, the transport, you don't have a whole lot of good transportation to be able to get around. So they have to take a lot of buses and taxis and stuff. So for people to get around, what they do is have a lot of small churches that are in the neighborhoods. And that way they don't have to go very far. They're able to connect with the church body. And then after that, we were able to go to the Mexican convention, which was down in Cabo San Lucas, which was really a lot of fun. Which was surprising, because usually, you know, coming out of COVID, we thought that they were going to do something closer to Tijuana, where the majority of the churches are, but we were able to go there. And at we had the president of Foursquare Church in the U.S., he was able to be there, which was pretty cool. And then we took a couple days for ourselves, and we hadn't been diving much. That was one of the fun things we like to do, and that was really good. I have some really cool pictures of that. I just don't want to put them up here. My screensaver on my phone is where I got a moray eel coming out of a rock. It was really fun. And then here's another church that we ended up doing. This church had been coming down twice a year before COVID, and they hadn't been able to come down for 2 full years. And the thing is that as soon as they came back to this church, because that's what we want to do, we don't want to just have teams come down and just do stuff. We want to build relationship. And so we always were taking it back to the exact same church. And this church remembered everybody. They're like, oh, yeah, you were here 3 years ago. And they really appreciate the fact that they were coming down and building relationship. We don't do any construction with this church. We don't do any major things. We just go and be with them. And this last time, they go, the next time they come down, the pastor and his wife go, we want them to come over to our house for dinner. So the entire team is going to go to their house. And they're going to come back in April, I believe. But it's just, that's the whole point of what we do. It's not doing things or painting a wall or building something. It's about maintaining and introducing and building relationships. Of course, whenever they come down, there's an orphanage that they always go to. And what was really interesting is seeing how some of these kids had changed in 2 years. When they were like this the last time we were there, now they're like this. But the thing is, it's the same thing. It's like these kids are like, and they knew the team members by name. And they remembered them from 2 years ago. And so being able to go down and just, they did obviously face painting. They don't always look like the white face, you know. So just in the way what we do teams is we don't come down and do a program, because they get a lot of that. And so what we do is we go and we have stations. So we'll have like 5 or 6 craft stations and some games and stuff outside, and we let the kids do whatever they want. They'll go from station to station, or they'll stay at one if that's what they want to do, because it's not about doing a program. It's about building a relationship. And so there's people at each of the stations, and they get to know the kids, and there's some kids that they go to the coloring station, and they're there all day, you know, doing watercoloring and stuff like that. And that's fine, because that's what they want to do. We don't want to have to sit them down and say, okay, get ready for this program that we're going to put on. And they're like, okay, how soon is this going to be done so we can get on with what we want to do? One of the fun things, though, is that they always do is they do this homemade kind of a gel type of a thing. And these kids just love making this slime stuff. Oh, there's glitter all over the place, and they're like, okay, we're gone. And then they also always generally do like a food craft, which is always the one that everybody goes to first. But anyway, that's just some of the stuff that we do there. Right, this is a friend of ours. She was part of a ministry that we partner with a lot. And the reason I'm showing this is that we're in the middle of finishing up her house. Her husband died right at the beginning of COVID. And so some people, in fact, that's the wall of her house there. They paid for doing the house, but not all of the stuff inside, including the kitchen cabinets. And so I'm actually working. I'm not building a cabinet there. That's a different type of construction. That I just want to make everybody aware that that's not how I make cabinets. But I'm I'm actually finishing up some cabinets for the lady, because it just was, you know, we're trying to raise funds for it, and so our budget was pretty slow. So that's some of the stuff that I was doing. What we have coming up in the near future is doing some other training and stuff. I have a couple. In October, we were able to go down to El Salvador for a missions retreat, which was really nice. We hadn't been with some of these missionaries for a long time. And these were missionaries from all over the Americas. So we had some people from Peru, we had in the Caribbean, we had Central America, we had North America. It was really cool just to be able to go and talk to people that are like-minded and just get away and just have some stuff. It was really awesome because they actually had some therapists there and a lot of different things going on. And then when I came back, we had, this is what's called the discipleship leadership training. And this was for leaders from the Caribbean and North America. And I was there and I coordinated the travel from anybody who flew into the San Diego airport. And it was my job to get them across the border and back. I had 20 people from 8 different countries that I had to coordinate. I crossed the border 10 times that week because different people had different types of ways that they can get back across the border. But this is something that's done. It's on a global scale. This is something that's done all over the world. And I was able to help out in there. And then the next thing we did is help. I helped to host the training for some new missionaries that are going all over the place. So we had trainers and stuff like that. And this was like only 2 weeks after that other one. But because so many people were going and coming at different times, I crossed the border 12 times that week. So within a three-week time, I did it 22 times. I got to know that border really, really well. And then one of the things that we were able to do is kind of give them an opportunity to practice some of the stuff that they were learning. And so we went and we were down, this is in downtown Tijuana. We went and had a prayer, was praying over the city there. This is really in the central area, really close to the area that you really don't want to go there in when it gets too dark. But we were able to go there and just spend some time and pray over a church that's right in the center of that and just kind of support that in a little bit. Right at the end of that, I actually had an overlap of a team coming from, that's called the Church on the Way. It's a church up in Van Nuys. They were able to send their youth group coming down, and they spent a weekend doing a little bit of construction and a lot of VBS. So that's kind of what was going on that's just in the last 6 months. Starting the next year in January, I'm supposed to go down to Oaxaca, actually a city by the name of Huxlahuaca again. I haven't been able to go down there for a while, so I'm going to go down there for a couple weeks. Also hosting another training with some people that are the missions reps all over the United States. They're all coming down to do a training and a retreat for us, and then we have a couple of teams that are scheduled for the spring. So one of the things that I wanted to do is, that's all about us, that's all about us. But I wanted to kind of not it be focused so much on us a little bit. I kind of want to have a little bit of a different perspective. And so I was thinking, I'm like, okay, God, what can I finish this up with? And earlier last week, we had a power outage at our house. And usually it's about an hour, hour and a half. And so January, I was able to go into the garage and get the electric lamps that we have because it wasn't quite dark yet. And January came home and she's like, why is the garage door not open? I'm like, I told you, no electricity. And she goes, well, okay, then, well, I'm just going to, let me get some Wi-Fi. I'm like, that's plugged in. There's no electricity. She goes, okay, well, I'm going to heat something up in the microwave. I'm like, plugged in. So she had a class that night, so she ended up going over to a friend's house that still had electricity. And so I was sitting there by myself in not complete darkness, but I had a little bit of light. And it's something that I've kind of been working on lately is really trying to focus in and really make sure that I'm hearing God's voice. And a lot of times we get so busy in life that we lose being able to recognize when it's God's voice and when it's ours. And so one of the things that I'm trying to do is take some time in what we call silence and solitude. Just take some time in the morning, just get away from all the distractions. Well, having the electricity out really makes it easy to not have distractions because I couldn't get on Facebook, I couldn't get on ESPN, which that was just horrible. But I didn't have, I literally couldn't do any of that because where we are, we have our cell phone service isn't good, so we don't have good data. We have like one bar, so everything's done through the internet. But it gave me some time to just sit and be quiet and listen, which is something I find hard to do because even when I'm not saying anything, the voice in my head keeps just rolling. It's like you have this to do, this to do, this to do. And so right now, that's one of the things I'm really trying to focus on and trying to practice is taking this time of silence and solitude. And so I started thinking about today. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's great talking about what you know, all the activities. Yeah, we're busy. We're doing all this stuff. But that's not about what Christmas time is about. I'm like, so let me, what can I say? I want to do something maybe just a little different. Maybe so, you know, because there's a lot of people that talk about the Christmas story and that's great and that's awesome. But I didn't want to be just another one of those. So I'm trying to think, I'm sitting there, I'm like, all right, God, you know, I'm just, what do I want to say? What do I want to leave him with? And I'm like, wow, actually, that's kind of egotistical. What do I want to say? What do I want to hear? And so I just sat there. I'm like, okay, God, what's the point at the end of the day, at the end of the service, when people are walking out, what's the point that I want them to remember? What's the point that you want them to remember? And that's when I just heard, I just felt like this. I mean, if there's one thing to really be focused on, isn't it that? And everything else gets boiled down to this. And so I'm like, all right, I can think about this, and how do I finish that up? And I'm looking at the Christmas story, and like, yeah, you know, you can see that where God loves you in the Christmas story. I'm like, but wait a minute. You know, the Christmas story is not, it's not the point. The resurrection's the point. And Christmas is just the beginning of that story. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I see where you're going with this, God. All right. And I'm like, wait a minute, but that's not really, Christmas really isn't the beginning of the story either. The beginning of the story is Genesis. It's like, the Christmas story is like the third act of a play. And if, okay, for the guys in here, it's like the third quarter, okay? It's a start of the second half. It's the thing when things really become important, when the action really gets built up. That's what the Christmas story is. And if we look at it, it actually goes back. It goes back to Genesis. And the bottom line is that that's where the whole Bible is about. This whole Bible is about this. It's about God loving you. It's the whole book is about God expressing his love to you. And this is where it starts. This is where it starts right here. And I'll put enmity between you and the woman and between your offspring and hers, and he will crush your head and he will strike your heel. That second part, do you understand what that's talking about? That's talking about when Jesus arrives. Do you know when this was said? Right after God comes down to the garden and confronts Adam and Eve. Your redemption story started right then. He was already thinking about us, thinking about how can I fix this immediately after it was broken. It's not like this came along. You know, he's sitting there for 1,000 years going, wonder what I could do. It's not. He immediately was thinking of what is the best plan that I could do. Now, mind you, this is 4,000 years before Jesus is born. God is already thinking 4,000 years in advance. Already talking about, I'm just telling you, this is what's coming. He already knows. And see, for me, okay, I'm a history guy. That's who I am. I love history. Jennifer was taking a history class, and she's like, what about, I'm like, oh, well, you have to go through all this first to get to that. She stopped asking me questions. She asked, she's like, that's too complicated. But why did Jesus come then? In that time in history? Why not earlier? Why not later? Why then? If you look at it from a historical point of view, at that before, if you try to get too much in history before that, people weren't writing a whole lot. It's not like they would send a stone tablet in the mail. The stamps alone would have been too much. So writing wasn't very well. See, but that's how we got most of the New Testament. It's letters being written from one person to another or one person to a church, or God had to wait for us to catch up to him so that we can spread the gospel that he has given us. The other thing is, the Roman Empire at that time was a stable empire, which did not maintain that. But what did they do? One of the major things that they did was that they built roads. Some of those roads are still today, which California could take some. I won't get into that because I don't live here. But they built these roads, which made it very easy for people to go from one area to another. See, God was waiting for the infrastructure to be built. But if he waited a little bit longer, the Roman Empire was on its decline, and it was being attacked from a lot of different places, so it wasn't safe to do all of that stuff. People weren't traveling around because they didn't know who they were going to run out. They're like, oh, hey, there's a Byzantine there. I don't think I want to see that guy. This was the perfect time. It really was kind of like the earliest time that God could do that, because before that, we would not be able to get the message out. He needed the gospel to be established when Constantine came around so that he can make it the official religion of the Roman Empire, and then it really expanded. See, I've heard this said once, and I tend to believe it. God knows what he's doing. He had a plan. You see, there's what's in construction is what's called a critical path. There's certain things that have to happen before you can go on to the next step. And that critical path, you have to follow it. There's some other things that you can add to it, but you have to maintain your critical path or else everything else falls apart. You cannot, well, you could, but it wouldn't be wise to put your drywall in before you put your electrical systems in. It makes it difficult, or they're on the outside of the wall. Same thing with the plumbing. There's things that you need to do first before this other things can come. And God is so good at this. He knew exactly what the circumstances would be for his gospel to be spread the easiest. And that's why I believe he picked that exact time. See, God talked about the crucifixion and Jesus and the birth a lot in the Old Testament. Some scholars say there's over 300 prophecies about Jesus. One of them talked about that he was going to be crucified with criminals. And it talks about this in Psalms 22. Dogs surround me, a pack of villains encircle me. They pierce my hands and my feet. All my bones are on display. People stare and gloat over me. They divide my clothes among them and cast lots for my garment. This was said 1,000 years before Jesus came. 1,000 years. But God was already talking about it. He also said in Isaiah, therefore, I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors, for he bore the sins of many and made intercession for the transgressors. Again, talking about that he was going to be crucified with the other thieves. And this was done 800 years before Christ. And in Micah 5:2, talking about Jesus being born in Bethlehem. But you, Bethlehem, that word, though you were small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times. This was said 700 years before Jesus. So what's the point? The point is that God knew about all the stuff that was going to be happening at Christmas time, thousands of years before it happened. So, I venture a guess that he probably knew about you a couple of thousand years after Jesus. And so these things that he put in place, these things about talking about redemption and talking about how he can restore his relationship with you, he knew from the beginning of time. And you're like, I know that, yeah, that's fine. But I'm not really, he's talking about things that are in the Bible. I'm not really in the Bible. I'm not, they didn't know about me. No, you are in the Bible. Right here. Oh. God was planning your redemption as soon as his relationship with mankind was broken. Forgot about that slide. See, I told you. I did it at 6 o'clock this morning. Right here. Then Jesus told him, and this is, I'll give you the background on this. Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believed. This is where Jesus has already been resurrected. He hasn't ascended yet. And Thomas, the famous doubting Thomas, said, hey, unless I touch him, unless I put my fingers in the holes in his hands, I don't believe that that's who it is. And Jesus shows up and says, you asked for it, here you go. The thing was is that he was talking about you in this scripture. Because you believed without seeing. Whereas somebody who had been spending 3 years with him had a hard time believing that this is what he could do. That he could be resurrected from. And yet, you guys, you heard. And God stirred your heart and you believed. He's talking about you right here. So if Jesus knew, if God knew that Jesus was coming 4,000 years before, and then reminded us another 1,000 years, and then reminded us again in 800 years, and so on and so on, do you not believe that he knows you? Because he was talking about you there. You see, I really could not think of any greater gift to give anybody than to remind them on how much God loves them. Because it all comes down to that. All of my personal issues and problems and situations can be all washed away if I just remember that. And God put a whole lot of effort into doing this. I mean, we're talking thousands of years that he's putting things into place in order for Jesus to arrive, to be able to be crucified, to be resurrected, in order for you to restore your relationship with God. Now, what I have learned, took me a while, but what I have learned that when I'm planning something for January, if I put a lot of effort into it, it actually has a greater effect. When I was planning on asking her to marry me. I took my time. Drove her nuts, but it took her time. Because I wanted to put a lot of effort into it. I wanted to make it super special. And so the problem with living in Las Vegas, where we did at the time, is that you don't go down to the strip unless you absolutely have to. But that's where I wanted to ask her, was at the little mini Eiffel Tower right there at the Paris Casino, because I know she loves Paris and everything. I'm like, that'd be cool. But how do I get her down there without her suspecting anything? That was the hard part. But it was right around this time of year, Trans-Siberian Orchestra is coming to Vegas. I'm like, perfect. That's an excuse. That's all I need. I need an excuse. So I'm like, hey, why don't we go? She's like, ah, sure. I'm like, you know what? We really haven't had a date night. We haven't had a good night out. Let's just make a full night out of it. She's like, okay. I'm like, look, I'll plan everything. And so we go, and we're getting ready. I'm like, yeah, we'll go out to dinner first. She goes, all right. And so she's taking her time and taking her time and taking her time. I'm like, would you hurry up? She goes, oh, we got plenty of time. I'm like, how do you know? You don't even know where we're going to eat. Finally, I get her into the vehicle. We start going down to the strip. She goes, oh, where are we going to eat? And she's guessing all these places. So we pull into the Paris, and they have a small little elevator that goes up to the restaurant there. We go through. We get to the elevator, but they have a maitre d' there, so they make sure that only the people that have reservations can go up. And so he goes, you got a reservation? I'm like, yes, under Wilson, da-da-da. He goes, oh, where are you guys from? I'm like, we live here. He goes, oh, so what's the special occasion? I'm like, nothing. Stubborn. No, we're just deciding to have a good night out. Oh, okay, all right. Go up the elevator. We're sitting down. The waiter comes over. Hi, how are you guys doing? Where are you guys from? Oh, we live here. Oh, is this a special occasion? I'm like, no, stop. All of a sudden, January's kind of looking at me like, is something going on? I'm like, see, every time I try to do something nice, you already expect something else. There's so much pressure. You always do this. She's like, I'm sorry. That way it kind of took it off, so no matter what else happened in the evening, she would be afraid to say anything because she was afraid that she was wrong. So we're sitting there, and we're looking out over the strip to the Bellagio, and they have the big sign there for the Paris talking about, you know, going up to the top. And so I'm like, you know, we got plenty of time. And I've never been to the top of the tower here. Do you want to go? She says, I don't know. Now, mind you, I have this all planned out. But she thinks it's coming last minute. And so she's like, sure, why not? I'm like, all right, so we finish dinner, go down. You have to go to a different elevator. We go up, and they have those little photo spots there. And so I'm like, you know, we never do this. Why don't we just go ahead and have them take our picture? Because in my mind, I'm like, you're going to want to remember this night. And so we did, and silly me, I had the ring in a big old huge box in my pocket in my coat. And she goes and wraps her arms around me. I'm like, ah! Because her arm went that close to the box. I'm trying to block it out. End up going up to the top. Get up there. She's like, she's trying to look on the other side. I'm like, hey, there's something on the back side I want to show you. She comes around. She's like, what? Tap her shoulder. There I was with the ring. Once she found out how much effort I put in to doing all of those things, it made it so much more special. Because she knew I just didn't do it on a whim. Because afterwards, then I went through and I'm like, okay, well, this is why I was so upset, because I had all of this planned and you were dawdling. The thing is, as much planning as I did that in order to ask somebody I love to be my wife, how much more effort and planning has God done in order to get you back to a relationship with Him? I spent a few months planning mine. God has spent thousands of years for you, planning and putting everything in place so that when you come along, one thing that you know is that God has put an amazing amount of effort to restoring His relationship with you that has spanned centuries, just so He can show you how much He loves you. That jumped too far. Oop, it canceled it out. Oh, well. You saw it. That is the Christmas story. That is God's story to you. That is the one thing, if you never, anything ever I say that you remember, that anybody says that you remember is that God loves you and has put an extremely large amount of effort to making sure that you have an easy way back to Him. So as you're going through this Christmas season, and they always talk about Jesus is the reason for the season, I disagree. You are the reason for the season. God's love for you is the reason that this whole story came about. It's because of you and how He wants to have a personal, one-on-one, face-to-face, heart-to-heart relationship with each and every one of you. So that's the point I want to leave you guys with. Have a Merry Christmas. Feliz Navidad.